welcome on into Kildare Focus. You're listening to KFM. It's Caoimhe Hearney with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Mark Cohen. He's the founder of MoneySherpa.ie, and he'll be telling us about how Revolut users in Ireland are to get an Irish IBAN within months. Then we'll be speaking to Dr. Alison Connolly. She's exposure scientist at UCD. One in four people in Ireland have low-level exposure to the weed killer glyphosate, new research has suggested. Then we'll be speaking to Maeve Richardson. She's deputy president of the Union of Students in Ireland. She says students are being forced to turn to charities to pay their bills. We'll be speaking to Paul McKinney. He's director of donor services and logistics at the Irish Blood Transfusion Service, and they are calling for immediate donations as blood supplies across all groups are running critically low. And then lastly, we'll be speaking to Yvonne Boland. She's chairperson of Newbridge Tidy Towns. The Liffey Linear Park in Newbridge received a special award in the Creative Place category at the Pride of Place Awards ceremony. And as always, you can keep up to date with us on kfmradio.com. And if you want to get in touch, you know what to do.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, the accounts of Revolut's 2 million customers in Ireland are to be migrated over to an Irish IBAN number in the coming months, the online bank has said. And I'm joined now on the line by Mark Cohen. He's founder of MoneySherpa.ie. Good afternoon, Mark.
Hi, Caoimhe.
Up until now, Mark, just explain to the listeners, Revolut, if you had a Revolut bank account, say, you had a Lithuanian IBAN, is that correct?
Yeah, the change today, although it might sound quite technical, is actually quite big news. Technically, with a Lithuanian IBAN, Irish customers should have been able to receive their salary into their bank account under the Single Payments Directive. However, a lot of employers practically just didn't get around to upgrading their IT systems, which meant that if you wanted your salary paid into your bank, and that's quite an important thing, you actually still had to have one of the traditional Irish banks. So with the launch of Irish IBANs by Revolut, which is rolling out over the next couple of months, that really removes the last thing that the 2 million customers who've got Revolut needed an Irish bank for. So they can now just pay their salary straight into their Revolut account and pretty much do all of their banking needs using Revolut, dump their traditional bank account for almost all things, and then avoid the fees, etc. So it is actually, although it sounds quite technical, it is quite a big change.
Okay, and what does that mean then for people who, like, let's say most people, I'm sure you know, they have a Revolut account and then they have their, what traditional banks say. Are we looking at a case where people probably will just have a Revolut account down the road and use that as their bank?
Yeah, so what we've become used to in Ireland is a real inertia, and I think the Irish banks have really got used to this. So the actual number of people who actually switch their current account each year is 0.03%. So the banks have been able to be very comfortable, let's say, in their shoes that nobody was going to switch. But Revolut have rapidly been building their customer base. So 2 million is quite a staggering number. There's more Revolut users in Ireland per capita than there is anywhere else in the world. We're the second biggest market that Revolut have. And I think that shows the real kind of demand that there is for a more kind of forward-looking banking service. With this change, you can simply pay your salary straight into your Revolut account. Then obviously you've got your Revolut card that you can use to withdraw money. You can use the app to do all sorts of things, your standard banking things, but also, of course, you've got all those additional features that you don't get from the traditional banks.
Yeah. And is there any reason why we have more users per capita than any other country? Is there any reason?
I think there is a reason. My own opinion is that it is the lack of innovation in the Irish banking sector for the last 10 years. So in a lot of other markets, if we look across the water to the UK, there have been a lot of what are called neobanks, new banks that have emerged in the last 10 years who are using online digital apps and offering a lot more choice in the market. In Ireland, we have seen hardly any innovation in the Irish market for the last 10 years. So we've been looking to overseas banks like Revolut to come in and provide that. So there's actually three overseas operators now operating in Ireland. Revolut are by far the biggest. There's also N26, which is a German bank. And then there's a very recent entrant, which is originally a Dutch bank called Bunk. And they also have Irish IBAN numbers as well. So there's a real kind of shift in choice, which I think is very welcome to see. And this is the latest bit of good news in terms of the innovation. So it's not really happening with our banks, but what it has done is it's given the opportunity for others to come in and provide to meet that need.
It's especially timely with the Ulster Bank closing here in the Republic as well, to give people that extra choice as well, Mark. In relation then to, say, mortgages, like, would we be able to see Revolut give out mortgages, or do they do it in other jurisdictions?
Not in any jurisdiction to date. The CEO of Revolut has said that they are looking towards doing that. Mortgages is quite a complex product, and there's a lot of regulatory hurdles to get over. So one of the reasons that Revolut hadn't launched Irish IBANs here before is that our regulator is quite slow, one of the slowest, if not the slowest, in Europe to grant banking licenses, and quite old-fashioned in kind of their approach. So it does make it difficult for some of the new providers to come into the market and offer services. And when it comes to lending, the hurdles are even higher. However, given the need for competition in the market, I think there is pressure on the central bank to regulate and allow, authorise these new banks relatively soon. So although it's not coming today, I know there is a will in these neobanks to enter the mortgage market, and I'd be hopeful that in the near future, the regulation and the authorizations are forthcoming from the central bank.
Okay, well, that is Mark Cohen there, founder of MoneySherpa.ie. Revolut users in Ireland are to get Irish IBANs within months. Thank you very much, Mark. Now, one in four people in Ireland have low-level exposure to weed killer. That's according to new research by scientists at University of Galway, and it's the first study of its kind in Ireland. And I'm joined now on the line by Dr. Alison Connolly. She's exposure scientist at UCD. Good afternoon, Alison.
Afternoon.
Tell us a little bit more about this research. One in four people in Ireland have a low-level exposure to weed killer glyphosate. Explain to people what that is.
So for the past decade, we've been doing research on glyphosate exposures among workers and the general population. This is the first of its kind. This is the first time we're looking at families' exposure, so including parents and children. And glyphosate is a chemical that is the active ingredient in products, weed killers such as Roundup and other products. But it's been used since the 70s, and it's in over 750 products worldwide. So when we were doing these studies, we thought that there was probably a dearth of information on exposures to humans to this chemical. So we've done investigations among workers, and in this study, among the general population.
Okay, and how harmful is it to people?
So in Europe, we have reference values for this, and the European Food Safety Authority have what they call a daily intake allowance. So this is kind of the level you can intake before there's any appreciable risk to health. And when we compared our values, our maximum values, to the acceptable daily intake allowance, we found that it was less than 1% of the guidance value. So the levels we're finding are very low level exposures.
Okay, so it's not causing any serious illness at the moment?
Well, as we follow scientific research, I mean, currently the European Commission are re-evaluating glyphosate, and they're hoping to have a final decision by July of 2023. But so far, they have just classed glyphosate as potential eye damage. So people that are using glyphosate should be very careful to make sure they're using proper protective equipment and that it can be damaging to the environment. So to ensure that if it is being used, that it's like buffer zones near water courses and sensitive areas.
Okay, so I see here that the research on cancer classified glyphosate as a group 2A, probably carcinogenic to humans back in 2015. Probably, but not definitely. Is that what they're saying, Dr. Connolly?
So in 2015, the International Agency for Research on Cancer did classify glyphosate as a 2A probable carcinogenic. And this was based on limited evidence in humans and sufficient evidence in experimental animals. However, there has been other organisations and authoritative bodies that have classed it differently. So the European Chemical Agency found that there wasn't sufficient evidence to classify as carcinogenic, as well as the European Food Safety Authority. So, but it is highly debated in the scientific community.
Okay. In the families that took part in the research, Dr. Connolly, were many of them living on farms or was it people in urban areas? What was the survey done? How was it done?
So we looked at 68 families and 14 of them were farm families and the remainder were non-farm families, meaning that a person in the house didn't use glyphosate as part of their daily duties on the farm.
Okay. Okay. And was there any like a higher prevalence of it within certain families or certain farm families or urban areas?
So what we found is that when we looked at the families, when we compared the families side by side, we didn't actually find any statistical difference between the families. Now, again, it was very low level exposure. And because only a quarter of our samples were quantifiable, then it limits the amount of statistical analysis that you can do. But we didn't find a statistical difference between the families. We found that five concentrations were among people that used glyphosate. We did find that their family members had a correlation, meaning that if you lived in a house with a farmer that used glyphosate, you may increase as the farmers increase. But again, there's not statistical difference between families.
Okay, we're just losing you there slightly, Dr. Connolly,
sorry.
If you want to move a slight bit. So I think I just caught sort of what you said. So someone who lives in a house with a farmer who use glyphosate was more likely to also have a low level exposure too. Is that it?
Yeah, well, again, the higher the user's concentration was, there was a correlation then that the mother and children would also have increased exposure. But again, we're looking at very small numbers and only a quarter of them had detectable levels. So when you look at the family as a whole, we don't see a difference.
Okay. Okay, sorry, we're losing you there, Dr. Connolly. That's Dr. Alison Connolly there, exposure scientist at UCD. One in four people in Ireland have low-level exposure to the weed killer glyphosate, which is found in many of the things like Roundup and other, obviously, weed killers that are on the market there too. So very interesting research there. I know that Kildare County Council and a number of other councils are trying to move away from the pesticides allow more of a natural kind of a weeding to happen, or I suppose just in general that kind of pesticides, you know, obviously they're saying that it's not of major concern, but still it's not good to have anything like that in your system. So thank you very much there to Dr. Connolly with that new research. Stay tuned, because coming up after the break we have Maeve Richardson. She is the Deputy President of the Union of Students in Ireland, and she says students are being forced to turn to charities to help pay their bills.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, students are embarrassed because they have to ask charities to help pay their bills. That's according to the Union of Students in Ireland, following revelations that students are turning to St. Vincent de Paul for help. And I'm joined now on the line by Maeve Richardson. She's Deputy President of the Union of Students in Ireland. Good afternoon, Maeve.
Thank you for having me on. And that's exactly right. Many students are having to turn to charities in order to keep themselves in third level education. We're seeing charities such as St. Vincent de Paul, Protestant Age and many others having to support students in order for them to stay in third level education.
Okay, and is this for like the basic essentials, Maeve? Is it for paying, you know, their student fees, or is it, you know, literally like rent, electricity bills, that kind of thing?
It's being used for a wide range of things, you know, whether they're seeking emergency assistance or whether they're seeking welfare support when it comes to rent, their electric bills, even to help with food or equipment for their education that, you know, are quite expensive and are impacted very heavily by the cost of living. But in particular, rent and third level fees are the main things that students need assistance with.
Okay. And what kind of students are looking for this help, Maeve? And when I say what kind of students, because I know there are a number of people who, you know, get the grant. Is there an issue with the payment there? Like, is the grant enough to cover the expenses, or is it people who aren't eligible for the grant that are having to work a job and try and do college and pay for this out of their own pocket?
It's both groups of students. The CUSE grant doesn't go far enough. You know, you're trying to stretch your CUSE payments to, you know, cover your cost of living, cover rent, which just isn't enough. But also for the students who don't fall into the income threshold, you know, they might be that 1,000, 2,000 or even 5,000 over, so they don't qualify. You know, they're quite simply not considered, you know, deprived enough to qualify for CUSE, even if they are definitely going to struggle to pay their bills. So those two groups of students are falling into it. And most of these students are students that are working part-time and in some cases working full-time along their degree. They're trying to balance both. They're trying to budget. They're trying to see where their next meal is going to come from. They're trying to pay their rent. They're trying to commute, as well as, you know, utilising education as an equaliser and to create a better life for themselves. Mm. So CUSE isn't going far enough. But even if you are outside of CUSE, your income doesn't stretch far enough in order to pay. It's very difficult for the ordinary Irish family to be able to afford the cost of college. You know, we did get €1,000 fee reimbursement for students who were on the 3,000, but for students who already have to drop out or defer due to the cost of college, it's too little too late for them. Mm. You know, some luxury student accommodations, for example, in Cork City, are charging €9,000 for the academic year, never mind in Dublin. What ordinary Irish family is going to be able to afford that on top of fees, on top of feeding yourself, while trying to work a part-time job and stay afloat?
Yeah. And Maeve, are they still giving the CUSE grant based on the parents' or guardians' income? Is that how it still works?
Yes, they are. So that is a massive part of it. It's that your familial income decides whether you get CUSE or not. And there's different levels of CUSE grants. You know, you have the maintenance grant, which gives you a small fee towards your cost of living. There's the grant that just covers your €3,000 fees. There's another grant that may help towards, you know, field trips as well as your maintenance. But these went up, these thresholds for your family income were bought up by €1,000 in this year's budget, but that's quite simply not enough. You know, your collective family income could be, you know, between €40,000, €60,000, but that's going to get you just about on CUSE, but it's not going to, you know, cover the cost of college.
Yeah, yeah. I went to college, Maeve, just at the back end of the last recession, and obviously I and a lot of my friends, you know, we were struggling to pay rent and pay different things. And what a lot of people don't know about is that there is a student's assistant fund within most colleges, isn't there?
Yes, and this year and last year and in future, what's going to happen is we're seeing more and more students having to apply to student assistance funds. Our local student union officers all around the country, whether they're in IT Sligo, whether they're in Maynooth University Students Union, wherever they are having more and more students having to apply for student assistance funds. Some student unions have emergency funds because they have students who are just on the verge of absolute poverty. With students as well are suffering from hidden homelessness. You know, they're sleeping in their car, they're staying on their friend's couch for 3 nights a week because they just can't simply afford rent. And we've seen a rise with student unions setting up food banks because of the level of food insecurity among students.
Yeah, it's very serious. €2 million in total was paid out to help students with their fees, rent or travel expenses by different charities. And 600 students turned to St. Vincent de Paul to help pay their bills last year. Maeve, what are you calling for then in the Union of Students in Ireland?
So firstly, we're calling for the abolishment of third level fees that the 3,000 has to go. Our students cannot simply afford it in this environment. And also, education is supposed to be an equaliser and should be accessible as possible. Even prior to the cost of living crisis, we were calling for this. For example, we've had second level education fee-free for nearly 60 years now, but yet we keep that barrier for third level. We're also looking for more investment into student accommodation, purpose-built, affordable student accommodation. Funding or, you know, loosening planning permissions for the luxury student accommodation sector just isn't good enough. And we need to see those increases in the SUSE grant as well, so that students on SUSE can support themselves and don't have to rely on charities. Rent is one of the biggest factors here, though. We are not removed from the rest of society. There is a massive student accommodation crisis, as well as there being a massive housing crisis in general society. And part of that issue is, you know, seeing some student accommodations turn into short-term holiday accommodation, luxury student accommodation coming into the market, charging, you know, over €1,000 a month. What student can afford that? As well as, you know, landlord being the market. These are all huge things impacting students. As well as, you know, students who say, you know, oh, I can't afford to rent, maybe I'll commute, but often routes are very uncommutable, so that's not a possibility. And we are seeing that increase in student commuters.
What do students do then if they can't, let's say they live, you know, they're from Donegal, they're going to college in Dublin, and they can't afford an accommodation? Like, are they sleeping with their, like, in their friends' houses? Can they stay somewhere on college as an emergency? Or what way does it work, Maeve?
So every college is different, but in majority of cases, those students will either defer the year, will drop out, or they will sleep on the friend's couch for two or three nights a week, or they'll sleep in a car. If they can't afford it, then they simply find a way, or they just drop out of the education system completely. We're losing amazing young minds to this, you know? Students who want to do research, innovate, get involved in university life, but they can't due to the cost of college. You know, they, instead of thinking about, you know, what they're going to do with their degree, what placement they're going to do, spending time in the library, they're commuting ridiculous hours. And they should be, you know, investing themselves in their education, but they simply can't due to circumstances.
Yeah, and in fairness, like, the cost of transport isn't exactly, you know, wow factor either. Like, there, it is, it's still quite pricey to commute up and down to college as well, Maeve, isn't it?
It is, you know. Things have gotten slightly better with the student leave card and lower rates, but this is, again, a temporary measure in place for the cost of living. But let's say, for example, you live in Tipperary town, and you decide you want to go to college in University College Cork or Munster Technological University Cork. If you are living in Tipperary town and you want to get to Cork, the first train doesn't get into Cork until 9:45. So you're missing your 9 a.m. lecture, you're missing your 10 a.m. lecture. And, you know, traffic and parking is a massive factor as well. We've seen it in Maynooth University in particular, where students have been clamped because there simply isn't enough spaces. And we're seeing over 60% of Maynooth students commuting. And that number is on the rise due to the rental situation, not due to students, you know, thinking, oh, this is handy, I live in a county surrounding Maynooth, because students were doing that anyway. But it's students coming from further away who would normally be student renters, but there's nowhere for them to go. So now they're doing absolutely ridiculous commutes over hours and hours. But then they get to college, they're driving around for 40 minutes trying to find a parking space, they miss their lecture, or if they just simply try to find somewhere else to put their car, they'll get clamped.
It's terrible. I remember when I was in the University of Limerick, we could never find parking, but like that, you know, it wasn't too bad. We could walk in, but like that, for people who lived in Limerick or were commuting in, it was always a struggle for them. That's Maeve Richardson there, Deputy President of the Union of Students in Ireland. Thank you very much, Maeve, for joining us. And the Union of Students in Ireland, they're calling for the student fees of €3,000 to be abolished. Now, the Irish Blood Transfusion Service is asking for immediate donations as blood supplies across all groups are running critically low. And I'm joined now on the line by the Director of Donor Services and Logistics at the Irish Blood Transfusion Service, Paul McKinney. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
Paul, why are blood donations so low, or why are we running so low in Ireland?
Well, it's actually, the donations have been not bad, actually. It's really down to supply and demand. Hospital demand has been extremely high over the last 3 months. We're regularly issuing over 2,400, between 2,400 and 2,600 units every week to hospitals. And to be honest, we are just about matching that demand, but we have had over the last 6 weeks a lot of sickness out in the community, which has affected our donor attendances, and we're regularly, although it did improve slightly last week, but we are losing about 20% of people who have been sick, unable to attend the clinics and no shows. So it's really down to supply and demand, and this morning we find ourselves at just 3 days across all blood groups, and we need to hold 7, so hence the reason for the appeal.
Okay, so you're at 3 days and you usually have, or would like to have 7 optimal. Paul, I suppose for people who want to donate, like, are there any particular blood groups that you're looking for?
Well, it's a general appeal, so it's all blood groups. And what we would ask, if you get a text from us that you ring the number that's included in the text, please make an appointment and please try to attend if you can. We are saying for rhesus negative donors, if you don't have an appointment and the clinic is there, we'd be happy to facilitate you if you would to call on spec. But really, the best thing is to save your time is to go onto our website, giveblood.ie. There's an eligibility quiz there, and you'll be able to know very quickly whether or not you can give blood this time. What I would say, Cueve, is that, you know, this is a fantastic time of the year for making New Year's resolutions. We really do need first-time new donors, and I would ask if anybody is interested. And it is a wonderful thing to do, donate and help save somebody's life. Please go onto our website, giveblood.ie. There's a registered interest section there. There is a slightly different eligibility quiz to see if you can give blood, but please register your interest, and one of my colleagues will be in touch to process your registration. But what an amazing thing to do to save somebody's life.
100%. And Paul, are you still doing the reservation service? Like, you can't just drop in. Like, I know prior to the pandemic, I would have just called to the one in Naas, but then after that, I had to book an appointment.
Yes. We are. We run our appointments. We run our clinics by appointment now. Although we are making that exception if you're a rhesus negative, O negative, A negative, or B negative donor, and you don't have an appointment, we'll certainly facilitate you, because those are the slightly rare blood groups. And O negative is obviously the universal blood group. But yes, it's appointment only, with those exceptions. And that's really, it was something our donors always wanted. I suppose the pandemic forced us to implement the appointment system quickly. We do hope to have a new appointment system available by the end of the first quarter of this year, which hopefully will make things a little bit easier and a little bit more convenient for donors.
Okay, I have one text in here, Paul, to 0833 97 97 97, and this man says that he was a long time blood donor, but ever since you've brought in the appointment system, he said he waits longer now to give blood than beforehand. So do you think the appointment system is working well then?
It is working, and I am sorry, and I do apologise to that donor. Look, like with everything, unfortunately, we've been struck by sickness in our teams, and there have been on a number of occasions some of our clinic teams have been less well staffed than we would hope, but we still need to collect the blood. I would say that the view from donors, the majority view from donors, is that they're very happy with the donor appointment system, but look, we can always get better. I do apologise for any delays. We do try to process donors through between an hour and 2 hours, and I do appreciate the wait, but that 1 or 2 hours will save somebody's life or improve somebody's life, and it's the best 1 or 2 hours you'll have ever invested in your life.
Definitely, Paul, and I think the system of getting the text after you donate and you find out, like, you know, your blood has been used at the Mater Hospital, your blood has been used in Naas, and it's, in fairness, when you get that text, it's just like you feel like you really have done something good, don't you?
And you really have. And it that actually was something we were looking at, and we were trying to find out, well, and we realized we weren't actually closing the circle. We were asking people to come in and donate that time, donate their blood, and then that was it. You'd have a cup of tea and a biscuit or a bag of crisps, and you'd never hear from us until the next clinic. And we realized that we can close the loop. We can send the text as you have described. So you make your donation, and a few days later or a week later, you hear that that donation has been issued to a hospital where you know somebody's life has been improved or saved, and what an amazing feeling.
Yeah, well, that is Paul McKinney there, Director of Donor Services and Logistics with the Irish Blood Transfusion Service. And they are calling for immediate donations as blood supplies across all groups are running critically low. Now, I'll just go through a few of the upcoming clinics here in Kildare. So there is a clinic in Sarsfields GA in Newbridge. That's on the 7th, 8th and 9th of February. The 15th and 16th of February in Kildare Town at the Educate Together National School. On the 27th of February, School of Rida in Kilcullen, and then on the 28th of February in a community centre in Monasterevin. Now, of course, many people in this county do commute for work to Dublin. So if you are in Dublin and you have a couple of spare hours, or maybe you're free that evening or whatever this week, so there are clinics in Delir Street and in Swords today. Tomorrow, Stillorgan, Delir Street, Dunleary. On Wednesday, Stillorgan, Delir Street, Manor Estate, Perrystown, and then on Thursday, Stillorgan and Delir Street. On Friday, Delir Street. Sunday, Clondalkin, which for people in the north of the county here isn't too far. And then, of course, on Monday again in Clondalkin and Delir Street. So if you want to make an appointment, you can call 1-800-731-137. That's 1-800-731-137.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
If you come from Clutch Cross, you hit 80. If you're coming from Black Trench, you hit 80. So when you have on your car and your 80 comes off, it's up to you as the driver to be able to create your own speed in a safe manner. But if you have an accident and someone says what was the default, it's 80 on Clutch Cross side and on the Black Trench Road. I rejected the Kildare speed review for all these reasons, that the rural roads were just going to be left at high speeds, and even some of them were going up.
If you brought them over here, Lewis Hamilton wouldn't be able to drive over that at 80 kilometres an hour. It's absolutely mental.
But they would argue on that it's the driver that then has to assess the risk as they're driving, in the sense of the road where they are, the signage.
Join me, Owen Beattie, on Kildare Today for issues affecting you in your local community, as well as the biggest stories nationally and internationally. Monday to Friday from 9 to 11.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hardy.
Now, the Liffey Linear Park were the winners of a special award in the Creative Places category at the 2022 IPB Pride of Place competition, which was held in the Clayton Hotel last Saturday in Dublin, which was the 21st of January. And I'm joined on the line here by Yvonne Boland. She's the chairperson of Newbridge Tidy Towns. Good afternoon, Yvonne.
Hi, Caoimhe.
Yvonne, tell us a little bit about this award, and were you surprised to get it?
We were flabbergasted, to be honest. Yeah, it's great. So this award, we were put forward as finalists to represent Kildare County Council, or Kildare, by the council there earlier on in the year, ourselves and fellow finalists Nara Moore Development CLG and the Suncroft Young at Heart Group. And we were submitted to represent Liffey Linear Park in the Creative Place category, which is a new one for us, really. You know, we'd be used to representing the park for all its natural attributes and all of that in the Tidy Towns competition and the Green Flag awards as well. But this is different. We were to look at the park as a creative place in the town and in the community. So it really was a lovely opportunity for us to present the park in a different light. So when the judges visited then in the summer, we took the opportunity to show them the huge variety of uses that the park is put to by so many different members of the community here in Newbridge. And we were joined on the day by Annie from the Kildare Yarn Bombers, which is a wonderful occasion every year when the Yarn Bomb takes over the park. And Martin came from June Fest to talk about how the park is used as a, you know, a musical, an outdoor musical venue during the June Fest celebrations. And we had Dario and a few of the team from Crooked House, and they came to talk about how they've used the park as a an outdoor theatre space. And indeed the library were there represented as well. They've used the park as a an outdoor story trail. So the park is really, you know, it's a lovely park. Obviously, it's a beautiful natural space, but it's really, really valuable to the town and to the community as a an amenity and a creative and cultural amenity as well. So we're delighted.
Yeah, I have to say I've never actually been in the park itself, but I have, Yvonne, driven past it. So like if I go to Newbridge from the Naas side, I come over the river and I take a left and I go up the back of Safer where Whitewater is. And I always drive along there. And like you said, Annie with the Kildare Yarn Bombers, she has stunning displays of different things, and we've had her on many times, and it always looks gorgeous and it always looks really well kept. And of course, like, you're no stranger to awards. Like, you've held the Green Flag recognition for a number of years now too, haven't you?
Yeah, which is great, because that's an internationally recognised standard, you know, for environmental and other standards in the maintenance of the park, which is really, really important to us. And that's adjudicated every year. The judges come every year to walk through the park as well. We're going to have to get you over to the park, it sounds like, for a guided tour if you haven't visited.
I'll have to come over, and for the next big event now, I'll get Clem Ryan to send me over on official
Absolutely.
Work business.
Expensive paid.
Exactly. That's it, Yvonne. And tell me this, Yvonne, you know, has there many people within the Newbridge Tidy Towns that are making this happen and keeping the park alive, I suppose?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We've a great gang. They work really, really hard throughout the year. So we would have anything between 20 and 30 volunteers to get involved at different times of the year. And then we have Tom, who's in the park every day. Tom Bean, he's our stalwart. Without him, it would be impossible for us to maintain the park as well. So huge thanks and congratulations go to him. And we have a number of people who also help us when needs be, whether it be planting trees or painting or other projects that are necessary for the proper upkeep of the park. So, you know, this is really is a team effort. It always is a team effort, but I think for this particular award, it's even more so, because you know, I think the judges recognise just the wealth and breadth of use of the park and how it really is a focal point for the community. So that was, I think, what caught their attention.
I know, Yvonne, you use it for so many different things, but now that you've won this award, do you think there's any future plans or changes for the park?
Well, I mean, I think it's always evolving. You know, we do have ambition to add to the facilities in the park. We'd love to see some play equipment introduced into the park for our younger visitors. And obviously, of course, we'd love to see the park extended. You know, Newbridge is a growing town, and, you know, open spaces, green spaces are so important, not just for a nice walk, but for so many other things. So we would love to see the park extended. So we'll be, you know, putting our case to the council and anybody of influence to see if we can realise that ambition. I think it's just really important for the town to have green space available at the centre of the town that's accessible to all.
Definitely. What's your favourite thing in the park, Yvonne?
My favourite thing in the park is the wildflower meadow and the orchard.
Yeah. Oh, lovely, lovely.
Yeah, which comes into its own in the summertime.
Lovely. Well, I'll have to come over there in the summertime. Well, maybe before then, I'll come over in the spring and I'll see the lovely park, the Liffey Linear Park.
See you through the seasons.
Exactly. I'll come each season. That's the best thing to do, Yvonne. That's Yvonne Boland there, chairperson of Newbridge Tidy Towns. And the Liffey Linear Park in Newbridge has received a special award in the Creative Place category at the Pride of Place Award ceremony. And of course, thank you to Yvonne for coming on and telling us all about that. I have to mention too, Narramore were runners-up in the village with a population of 300 to 1,000 in the category at the Pride of Place Awards 2022. And they have led an impressive transformation of the village, and it oversees a variety of hardworking voluntary groups such as a Biodiversity and Tidy Town Committee, the Old Hardware and the newly reformed Sustainability Committee. So well done to all involved out there in Narramore and, of course, to Newbridge.